And now it's time for the Sports Kings from Queens.
His year again. Rory is a rare repeat winner at Augusta.
Welcome to the Sports King from Queens, where all the sports talk is royal, real, and straight from the burrows. Today is Wednesday, April 15th. This is episode 228. I'm Gino, joined by my co-hosts, Kevin and Darren. Please catch us wherever you get your podcasts. Like, subscribe, follow us on Facebook, YouTube, Instagram. Give us a like, join our pages. If you got something to say, tell us. Darren's always looking to give you a response. Masters has a champion. A tradition like no other. We have a champion. And we're going to go around the world of sports tonight. So we'll start it off with the Masters. Rory McIlroy delivered a historic performance, becoming just the fourth golfer ever to win back-to-back green jackets, first one since Tiger. Only other two are Nick Faldo and Jack Nicklaus.
That's pretty good company there, isn't it?
That's some damn good company. At age 36, he's the oldest to defend any major championship since Ben Hogan when he was 38 years old in 1951, the U.S. Open.
You remember like that, Gino. You remember that.
Kevin remembers that.
Don't take no crap from him, Kev.
In capturing his sixth major, McIlroy pulls alongside Faldo, Trevino, Mickelson with his 12th most all-time. And he's one behind a whole group of players, Harry Vardon, Bobby Jones, Gene Sarazen, and Sam Snead, Arnold Palmer. If he gets one more, he joins that group. Very prestigious, lofty heights he's getting to at this point. Kev?
Yeah, and among the Europeans, if you just count them, only Vardon is the guy in front of him, you know, with the seven. So, yeah, you know, tremendous.
Purse, $22.5 million. Worry, $4.5 million with the win. We'll talk about it. Scottie Scheffler came in second, $2.4 million. Opening rounds, 67-65. Built a record six-shot, 36-hole lead. Kev, tell me about Rory.
And what was incredible is when you look at the driving statistics, he was 90th. Out of 91 players in driving accuracy. The guy who finished behind him, 91st place, was the guy who finished 91st. I mean, the scrambling was incredible. I mean, the fact that he got to 12 under with a six-shot lead the way he was driving the ball on Thursday and Friday was incredible. But, you know, you start off with that lead, and you go into Saturday, and, you know, you wake up in the morning, and if you're Rory McIlroy, and if you told Rory, yeah, you're going to shoot a 1-over-73 on Saturday, he'd say, okay, you know, want to do better, but I'm going to have a couple of shot lead probably after Saturday because it's only 1-over-par.
Yep.
The problem is the field averaged 70.63, which was a record for a Masters Saturday. 10 players shot 68 or better. Cam Young shoots a 65 to tie Rory. So he goes from 8 back to tied. Scottie Scheffler, who was at even par, shoots a 65 to move from 12 shots back to 4 shots off the lead. And, you know, sets up a terrific Sunday. Right, Darren?
It was a great leaderboard. It was really, really exciting. I mean, but you look at Saturday, right? All of a sudden, Russell Henley shows his face for the first time. You hadn't seen him, but he comes out there and shoots the 66, right? Lee, Hao Tung Lee. All of a sudden, just burst on the scene. Morikawa, who was like the most inconsistent golfer of the week, he'd be blah, 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 and all of a sudden four straight holes with birdies, and all of a sudden, looks like he like having a round of his life. Shane Lowry freaking just pours it on and gets in there, and then you look at guys like Lee and Lowry, and on Sunday they both shoot 80, and yeah, they completely fall out of it. And you know, you're watching Patrick Reed for a little bit, and he's hanging around. There was a lot of good golf going on, and good golfers, Kev.
And one of my guys, Tommy Fleetwood, was right there too on Saturday.
And then he fell off.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There was a lot of guys that did a lot of great things for the weekend to make a run. The thing that you kept saying, because Scheffler's Saturday was really, really great. Because he shoots the 74 on Friday. He's even par. He's 12 back, whatever it was.
11 back, that's it, 12.
Yeah, 12. Whatever it was. And you're like, all right, you know, Scotty. And all of a sudden, we're watching, and I sent out the text, this guy could go 64-64. He went 65, what did he go, 65-68. But there was a lot that were real, real close. And, you know, it was a fun tournament down the stretch, Kev. Like you said, the scrambling is what made it great.
Yeah.
Scheffler, 39 straight bogey-free holes, making him the first player since 1942 to complete the final 36 holes of the Masters without a bogey is just ridiculous.
Yeah, I mean, the thing that killed him, I think, when you look at the first three rounds especially, is the 13th and 15th.
Yeah, he didn't gain on the par fives.
He was two over. He had two bogeys and four pars. You've got it. I mean, if you want to be in contention, 13, 15, you bogey them once, yeah, fine. But you've got to make at least two or three birdies on those two holes. And the only birdie he made was the 15th on Sunday on those two holes. It was just – that's what cost him the tournament.
Yeah, the funniest thing also was that, you know, you got to see Augusta in a way we haven't seen it in a while because there was no weather.
Yeah.
So we're so used to, you know, you're seeing Rays Creek and you're seeing against the winds and stuff. There was nothing. And there was a little bit of wind here and there, but it was nothing that you would go crazy about. And you saw the pin placements play a real factor on Sunday. Yeah. You saw really a little bit on Saturday, but on Sunday you're like, you're watching it. It almost felt like you were watching a Pinehurst where the balls are just rolling off and false fronts and all that kind of stuff. And I really kind of probably appreciated Augusta more this year because of watching it without any weather, without any rain, without any wind, without any cold. You got to see what the course can do, and I thought it was really good. I didn't mean to cut you off, G. I'm sorry. You're about to say something.
No, you're right on the button. I mean, listen, Scheffler starts Sunday. He opens with birdies on 1 and 3, and then he goes 11 consecutive holes just making pars.
Yep.
With incredible putts, though, to save those pars. His putter was on fire, and that's what happened to Cam Young. His putter fell apart on Sunday, and Rory was okay with both, right? But the thing about Rory is, and the thing I hate about when certain sports is, I hate a team or a guy losing something. Rory won this tournament. He scrambled to win it. He hit big shots when he needed to. On 18, him driving into the woods, you're like, it's Rory. You almost kind of expect him to do it. You can't even tell me that in the back of your mind you didn't think there was any chance he wasn't going to do it because you knew he was going to do it. He wasn't driving well all week like you said, Kev. And all of a sudden, 18, he's in there and he's in a bad spot. But then he hits it, you know, then he gets himself close and then he hits an amazing shot and he's right there, misses the putt when he had two putts to win it and he's able to knock it down.
Well, you think it was an amazing shot. We have no idea where his or Cameron's was because CBS just – oh, what they're doing the 18th hole. They just screwed up the ending of that tournament.
Yeah, they didn't show Rory's winning putt. They showed nothing. No. They were awful. And they've done this forever, Gino. It's been their event.
It's unbelievable.
You can't make it up how they screwed it up, and you can't even see the ball bouncing. Everybody's on 18. Have all the cameras move over. Watch everything.
Yeah.
And there was a pause with the announcers. Maybe because
they didn't know where the ball was.
That's exactly what I was going to say, Kevin, right? But then all of a sudden, they start talking again, and I'm like, all right, wait, we still have no idea where the ball is. Somebody point out.
Some spotter told Jim Nance where the ball was, but, you know, we had no idea.
The one thing I'll say, and when you get to Sunday, right, Rose takes the lead at 9, and all of a sudden, he shoots a 4-under on the front, and he gets out in 32, and you're like, wow. He got a two-stroke lead, and all of a sudden, everything falls apart. Shoots three over on the back.
Five birdies in the bogey on the front nine. He birdied 7, 8, and 9 to give him all the momentum. Like you said, a two-stroke lead. The green jacket, I mean, they're starting to measure him, out there for the green jacket. And all of a sudden, a couple of wayward shots. He had, 11? He had that one terrible second shot that was nowhere near. You know, he was afraid of the water and put that out. Left, and then on 12, he chunked the chip shot. Looked like us trying to chip.
Yeah. Oh, I couldn't believe that.
And before he knew it, a couple of bogeys, and he limps home at 10 under.
And throw on the other thing, just on the bad chip. watching Bryson DeChambeau on Thursday and Friday out of the sand made me feel decent about my game. Yeah. I mean, that was I'd get out of the sand easier. I know that that's a daunting sand. I would have gotten out easier. I would have gotten out maybe in two. He looked like he was the worst amateur golfer of all time in that sand, by the way. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to cut you off, Kev.
No, that's fine. Yeah, I was going to say, you know, Justin Rose, I mean, I had an opportunity. So they're at the RBC Heritage this week in Hilton Head. I was there last week during the Pro-Am. And the week after, or a couple of days after losing the playoff last year to Rory, and, you know, we see him on the ropes, and my wife is fumbling with the phone trying to get this selfie with Rose and the rest of my family. And Justin's, here, give me the phone. There he is. He takes the phone, snaps a selfie of the four of us. And all. He's just a perfect gentleman. I have to root for the guy. My wife and I were rooting so hard for Justin on the back nine.
Kevin, and you remember last year when Rory won and Justin's wife held on to Rory for it seemed like 20 minutes. It was probably like a 30-second hug. Yeah. I mean, they come off like the nicest people in the world. He takes the lead. You think he's got a shot. All of a sudden, Young can't hit a putt. Suddenly, Tyrrell Hatton out of nowhere starts burying everything. You don't even see him on the leaderboard for 3.5 days. All of a sudden, here comes Hatton. And you're like, oh, my God. Russell Henley takes the lead for a second. And you're like, what's going on here? And then all of a sudden, Rory kind of gets it going again, Kev.
Yeah. I mean, you know, you look at Sunday, you know, he opens up. I think he had the birdie early on two, and then the three-putt double bogey on four from 5 feet.
That was awful.
That looked like us putting.
Oh, absolutely.
I mean, you know, you look like that. Bogey's on six. He's dropped to 9 under. I think he was 3 back at one point there. And then all of a sudden, starting on seven, he goes 7, 8, 12, and 13 with birdies to get him back up into the lead. Pars out there, has a 2-stroke lead going into 18. And, you know, yeah, he bogeyed 18, but he had enough. Then that putt was just the next last putt was beautiful because it left him, you know, what, about 6 inches? That's all he needed.
But Kev, go back 2 shots. You know, he hits that drive. He's so far in the trees that the crowd doesn't know where to go. They're trying to move the crowd around. Okay, and then he finally decides that, you know what, I'm going to go straight this way, not this way. I'm going to go straight this way, and they had to move the crowd again. Okay,
I'm not going left of those trees or right over those trees. I'm going over those trees with a little draw.
All right,
yeah. I felt like I was watching Tim Cup. I really did.
And listen, Kev, that's the shot. I mean, if you break it down on 18, that second shot is what allowed him to win that tournament because he's a little off on that shot, and who the hell knows where he's going to wind up.
Listen, 16, he did a shot like that. 17, he did a shot like that. 18, he did a shot like that. Yeah. He scrambled like crazy.
Yeah.
Gino, great point, though, because you're right. If that second shot doesn't go where he puts it.
Well, and Darren, you know, it's when you see it on TV, you don't get the scope until they showed you that view from all the way up in the air looking down. And now you see it. Oh, wait a minute. He really can go this way and get through. He can. Because, Kev, if that's us playing around, we're forced to go through the trees, which we're just hoping that the ball comes out somewhere.
And we hope we hit it hard enough that we get through, but not too hard where it goes across. I mean, there's a million things going on for us. And by the way, every time they're in the woods and there's like 8,000 people lined up, I would kill somebody. Somebody would lose a freaking eye because there would be no way I would not slice something into somebody's face. There's no way. I don't even know how they do it the way they do it. It freaks me out. I'm like, I wouldn't stand there. I wouldn't even be close to standing there.
All three of us have a contest. How many people could we kill?
Yeah, you're 100% right, bud.
So Rory's 36. It's his sixth major. We talked about the group of five people that are one major above him with 7. After that is Watson at 8, Hogan and Player at 9, Hagen at 11, obviously Tiger 15, Jack at 18. You know, realistically, do we think he can win 3 more?
He could.
He's only 36. I mean, that's still fairly young.
One thing I will say, though, I left this weekend feeling more than ever that Scheffler's the best player in the world by far, even though Rory beat him. Just watching them both on, Scheffler's just – when they're both on, Scheffler's the better player. The best of Rory against the best of Scotty. Scotty's better. Scotty doesn't miss hit as much. Scotty doesn't miss the putt as much. It's just that Scotty's been having all season long one round that kills him. And then he has to gain. And then he has to gain. But I left there. And listen, not take anything away from Rory. Rory deserved the championship. He won it. He actually went out there and did what he had to do on 16, 17, and 18 to win it. But I left there more than ever saying, wow, Scotty really – if Scotty can put the four rounds together, he's the best. I don't think anybody can beat him right now. Gee.
So I've never disliked Rory. I just, based on performance before last year's Masters, and that's how I'll phrase it, I was so confused as how high up he was. He's always ranked on the golf rankings without winning any of these majors. Well, you know what? He shut my ass up because that's two Masters in 2 years, and now he shut my ass up. I'm not going to question why he's in the top two or three or four anymore. You got me.
That's the thing when you get to Rory's level is that you're counting majors.
That's it.
It's been a decade since he won a major.
That's it.
And last year we're talking about, is he just another golfer? Has he become overrated? Is he ever going to win one? Is Rory as good as – is it all about the name – like Sergio, where, like, you know, like he got a big, fast start. Everybody loved him. And I mean, Sergio got his major later, but like he was El Nino when he first came out. He was going to challenge Woods. And then Rory was going to be the next one. And last year, before the Masters, with all three of us are talking about, maybe Rory's just not that guy. And like you said, Gino, Rory said, F you guys. Well, I am that guy.
But Darren, I was not questioning how good he was. I just didn't know why they kept ranking him one, two, or three. Because to me, it was like, before the last year's Masters, Scheffler was one, and then everybody else was kind of in a group. Okay?
And your point, though, G, is we never questioned how good he was. We just questioned how great he was.
Yeah.
That's the difference. We didn't know if he was great. We knew he was really, really good.
I mean,
he's great.
He's got six, okay? If you tell me he wins three more over his career – He's at worst the fourth best player on the major list. You know, Nicholas, Woods, and Hagen have 11 or more, and then Player and Hogan are tied for fourth. He wins three more. That's who he's with. He's with Gary Player and Ben Hogan, okay?
He has the career Grand Slam, which already puts him immortalized, right? Yeah. If he gets to that level, he's like – he's in the conversation where people are talking about, hey, I saw Rory play once and it was amazing in person. That's when you get to that level.
I mean, you know, I can't think that he's not going to win another. Is he going to win three more? I don't know. So many things happen. He's in his mid-30s now.
One back injury and it's over.
Yeah, I'm saying, you know, one injury and he doesn't play for a year or whatever, and then – who the hell knows when he comes back how he's hitting the ball again. But at this point, I have to think he's going to win another couple. That gives him eight. That ties him with Tom Watson and one more than Arnold Palmer. I mean,
listen.
You're rarefied air at that point.
He just became an all-time great. He went from really, really, really good in 2 years. In 1 year, I should say. Yeah. One calendar year went from really, really, really good to great, Kev.
Back-to-back Masters will do that, Darren.
No doubt about it, pal. Especially when you haven't won one in 10 years, like Kev just said.
It's amazing how this guy in a given tournament can be so up and down the roller coaster ride that he goes on. But the thing is, you know, and I think this is why we love the Masters. We know the course so well. And these players know the course so well. And we're used to seeing these players. And he can think back now to the last 2 years when he goes in next year and say, I remember being here. I remember hitting this shot. And it's all positive reinforcement because he's won twice in a row.
Yeah.
Funniest story, and you guys might have heard this, Rory talking about last year, like the Wednesday or the Tuesday, pulling in. And there was no parking, and there was the champions lot. And he goes, well, I don't want to pull in there because I'm not a champion yet, you know. And then he was with somebody. He's like, I can't park in the champions lot. And then afterwards, now I can park in the champions lot. I mean, you know, it's very cool. It's actually outstanding. And listen, you know what? Rory sometimes gets a little controversial with comments here and there about the press, this, that, and the other thing. At the end of the day, though, he gave us a great tournament. He hit big shots and clutch shots on 16, 17, and 18. Got off to the fast start, like you said, Gino, and was able to hold off Scheffler, who that putt on 17 that looked like it was going to go, and it just like stayed to the right, and you're like, that's going to go. And Scheffler thought it was going, and it didn't. And he had a couple of those. He had one lip out. I mean, they all have those. But him doing it on 17 down the stretch was really a big – it was so close. That would have been – we would have had a playoff. Let's be honest. We'd have Rory versus Scheffler in a playoff. I don't know if it gets better than that.
That's it. You that's know what you want.
Rory, congratulations to him.
So, right. So looking ahead to next year real quick.
Yes, sir. Okay.
Arnie won his third Masters in his eighth time playing the Masters. Mm-hmm. Jack won his third Masters playing the eighth time. Tiger won his third Masters playing the eighth time. Next year, Scotty's eighth time playing the Masters. Oh. Can he win his third? Enjoy that. Enjoy. I mean, tell you about the holy trinity of golf. Yeah. Jack, Arnie, and Tiger.
Wow.
The fact is that if you look at the stats of Scotty versus Tiger early on, they're really close.
Oh, they are.
And some edges, in some places, Scotty edges them. And it's like we thought we wouldn't see anyone like Tiger start off the way Tiger started off. Scotty does. He just does it without the personality.
That's it.
I mean, yeah. Rory's a personality. So you see him, you hear him. He's verbose. He's fun loving. Scotty's not a bad guy. He's just, you know, he's about God and the kids, and you know, it's a different feel. You know, he shows excitement. But yeah, that's a great point, Kev. Third time in 8 years, we're going to see if Scotty can put it together, because if Scotty keeps playing like this, you feel like he can easily, you know, be in position to win the Open and win the U.S. Open, I should say. The British Open is, or the Open Championship is always like, you just don't know.
You never know.
The weather is so brutal. And sometimes you have the course where they're putting from 90 feet away in the middle of the fairway. You're in a pot bunker that's like 5 feet over your head, where you and I pick up the ball and throw it out. I mean, it's like ridiculous. But getting a little consistent, it's hard to imagine anybody beating
them. I mean, was it Carnoustie? Was it like about 40 degrees with 40 mile an hour winds that one year? That nobody shot, you know, 80 was a good score. Yeah,
because of the weather. That's what makes the Open great. The U.S. Open is going to be a shinnecock, so you're going to get wind, even if it's warm. You're going to get plenty of wind out there. So, you know, but you feel like Scotty's game should be right for the course, but we'll see what happens. Rory, congrats, man. Great job. The Sports Kings from Queens salute you.
All right. We'll move over to some baseball. Yankees, after today's game, they just completed a win. So they are at 9-8. Mets at 7-11.
The Yankees are now 10-8. We're 10-8 now.
10-8, excuse me. Listen, it's not even 20 games yet. It's early. Kev, why don't you tell us a little bit about the Mets first?
They suck.
Don't hold back, Kev. Tell us what you're thinking.
7-game losing streak, 10 runs in those 7 games. It's been pathetic. I mean, during the streak here, Jared Yount hit third. Mark Vientos has hit third. Brett Beatty's hitting third tonight. We're paying $300 fucking million dollar payroll, and these are the guys we have hitting third? Are you kidding me? Dante Bichette.
Dante, very good.
You wish you had Dante.
I take Dante right now at this age. Bo Bichette leads the team with 9 RBIs. That puts him in the top 112. I mean, there's 113 other players that have more RBIs than any other Met besides Bichette. I mean, the offense has been awful. The Dorf finally hit a home run, his first RBI. This is game 17. The holdovers, I mean, the only guy that's hitting well is Alvarez, 283. He's got 4 home runs, 4 RBIs. The young guys, I mean, it's about time. Beatty and Vientos, can they do something? I mean, it's almost impossible. Brett Beatty coming into tonight, 218 batting average, 211 on base.
It's hard to do.
That is almost impossible to do. The new guys, I mean, I was on this all off season. Simeon's below 200. Polanco's below 200. Robert's slumping, so he's down to 259, back to where we thought, or I thought he'd be, even dropping even more. I think the 394 on base is such an outlier. He's around 310 his last few years. This team sucks, and they've got no heart. Sunday night, they're losing 1-0 to the A's. They get retired 1-2-3 on 4 pitches in the bottom of the ninth. Monday, 1 over the minimum against Josh Robleski. 11 of the 27 outs on the first and second pitch. Last night, You know, they're down 2-1. McLean Yamamoto. I mean, talk about a classic pitcher's duel. Two of them are mowing down.
Yeah.
The other McLean team. Is much watched television right now, by the way.
Yeah.
I mean, if you're in New York, when McLean's pitching, you want to be at the ballpark or you want to be watching it right now.
Yeah. I mean, against Vesia, 10 pitches, 9 strikes, 3 strikeouts. Against Alex Vesia. This team is hard to watch right now. The pitch has been pretty good. Peterson struggled a lot. You're hoping, and Gino like this one, his ERA is 6.4, his FIP is 3.3, which shows that there's some bad luck involved there, too. He's not pitching well, don't get me wrong. But you would think he'll get back to where he should be. Senga, two good, one bad. Peralta's been good. A little overrated because the guy can't throw more than 5 innings.
You knew that coming in.
Yeah. Holmes has been their second best starter.
He's fun when there's runners on base.
But this team is just so hard to watch right now. And it's just, you know, David Stern talked about run prevention in the offseason. Well, the offense is preventing the runs, not the defense.
Listen, what we've learned is that Soto is the bat that this team needs. They have nobody else in that lineup that you could get that he makes the whole. He's the straw that stirs the drink. Not that they have to take strawberries line from him, but without him, the Met offense looks putrid. And the A's shouldn't be. And listen, I know the A's pitching has improved, and they beat the Yankees 2 out of 3 too, because the Yankees suck too. And we'll get to that in a minute. But the fact of the matter is that the Mets should not be scoring against the A's. If the Dodgers are shutting you down and you got beaten up by Yamamoto last night, you tip your cap, you move on.
But the A's coming in, like Sandy Koufax.
Yeah, it just doesn't happen. It just doesn't happen. It shouldn't happen, I should say.
Yeah. I'm done.
All right. Yankees. Yankees are simple, G. The same things we knew suck. Ryan McMahon can't freaking hit. So Volpe played a rehab game last night, faced Wheeler twice, struck out both times. That was nice to see. That's going to be great to improve on Caballero. And the bullpen's horrible.
Hey, do you want Luke Weaver back?
Listen, I was happy you took him. He had 1 year. I was fine with it. Listen, Williams hasn't been awful yet. He's been fine. He doesn't get in the same situations, but that'll happen. But, you know, the Yankees outside of Bednar, I mean, Doval has been much more of a disgrace than we thought, right, G? I mean, you know, Bird sucks. I mean, you know, Cruz is okay when he throws strikes. I mean, and Bednar's not been great, but he's been – for the Yankees, he's been great in the pen. But the thing, we knew we had no left side of the infield. Lombard's got to come up. I can't watch Ryan McMahon hit 112. I can't watch it. You know how they won this game tonight, by the way? One out, nobody on. They hit Chisholm, who talks way. If the Yankees were a good team, we'd be abusing Chisholm for the amount he talks and doesn't produce. But because the left side of the infield can't hit, I live with Chisholm, right? He gets a pop up to short. The shortstop and second baseman both call it. They let it go. It bounces, okay? So they get a base runner, right in the middle of the infield. And then it's still second. They walk Wells because, you know, you don't want to pitch to a dangerous Wells with one homer and one ribby.
Hitting 191 Wells.
A homer and a ribby. And then, you know, and then Caballero hits one up the gap. They score two. They beat the tag. I mean, but it should have been 2 out, nobody on. They let a pop up in the infield just drop, and that's how the Yankees won this game tonight. They score runs. Don't get me wrong. Schlittler's been really good. One rough start, but for the most part, he's been really, really good. And Fried, except for one little start, has been really, really good. And it was okay tonight until he started giving homers up in the fifth. You live with the starters. Weathers has been awful, but you know he's going to the pen as soon as the regular starters come
back. Somebody comes back, yeah.
Yeah, anybody, right? I mean, but what we knew sucked about this team, Gino, sucks. I mean, you can't play Ryan McMahon at third base, and I wanted him when he came. He just doesn't hit. I'll admit that I was wrong. I thought he would hit a few homers over that little right field porch and at least be a contributor. He's not a contributor at all, and the bullpen – you know, they sent Bird down last year, and now he's up, just giving up runs up here. They felt like they didn't want to waste his runs given up in the minors. We'll just do it up here. Lombard's got to come up, like you've been saying since the beginning there, Gino.
Everybody's bullpen sucks across the major leagues. There's like two good bullpens across the major leagues. Everybody's
follow one of them. The Padres are good.
Listen, that's one of them, but everybody's bullpen sucks. You got guys that get hit on any given day. There's been some guys who have given up some shots. Duvall is one of them, and I like Duvall, but you know, he's got to pitch better than this. Listen, I think Bednar is Bednar. I like the rest of the. I like Cruz. I like Hill. You know, Fried, Warren, Schlitla. I mean, you have pitchers on this team. Hitting wise, you're right. I wanted McMahon here too. McMahon has been awful at the plate. Just god awful.
McMahon fit the need last year.
I agree,
but. You know, this is so early that, you know, what are you giving? I mean, if you don't make the move now, what is it, within another week or 10 days that you have to make a move for Lombard?
I think so. I would have him up by May 1.
I don't think it's happening. At this point, they're waiting for Volpe to come back now.
Kev,
that's why I was waiting for them and hoping they were going to just bring him up to start the year. Because I knew if he started the year here, he'd have a good month before Volpe came back. So if he's playing well, he's going to stay here. And if he's not playing well, when Volpe comes back, you send him back down to the minors. But now at this point, there's no way they're bringing him up for a 2 or 3 week stint before Volpe comes back. There's no way.
I play him in third. I start him right away. I bring him right up and let him play third base.
Can he play third?
Yeah.
So that's another question. That's a good point. I don't know the answer to that, but that's a good point.
I mean, if you think,
are you going to be disappointed if Caballero's out of the lineup? He's scrappy. I don't mind him, but it would devastate me if Volpe's playing short and Lombard's playing third.
I wouldn't be completely upset, but I do like Caballero in this lineup. But I have to tell you,
well, he won the game tonight, but I still don't need to swap.
and if you told me that they're waiting for Volpe to come back and he's going to play short, and Caballero's going to get at bat to third, and you're not going to play McMahon every day, I'd be okay with that. If you tell me Lombard's coming up, I think it's a different story. I think then it's a completely different story. You play him at short, you play him at third, you play Volpe at the other one. Okay, fine. You got me. I think Randall Grichuk needs to go.
You sure? What? You sure about that?
Listen, I told you. Listen, I said it when we talked about this when we talked about the roster.
I got Dominguez tearing it up down there, and they can't get this guy. I got to watch Randall Grichuk.
I told you when you talked about Trent Grisham, I didn't think it was the problem. I didn't think the problem was Grisham. I think the problem was Grichuk. That's who took Dominguez's spot. Dominguez should be up here. You know, listen, I know they want to play him every day. I keep hearing that. You know what? Let him play up here.
He's a kid.
Blake Grisham is a fourth outfielder for now.
Why bury a kid that was your jewel a year ago, and now all of a sudden, because he didn't play good left field defensively, they buried this kid?
You know, Darren, give freaking Dominguez a month up here. Let Grisham be your fourth outfielder for a month. And if he's that bad, switch it off and let Dominguez be the fourth outfielder, and then put Grisham in here every day. Okay, fine. But, you know, you've now played it this way where Lombard's still in the minors, Dominguez is still in the minors, and the guys up here just aren't hitting.
I agree.
You know, can someone please put a phone call into Aaron Boone and tell him that Ben Rice can hit some lefties? He doesn't have to sit him against every frigging lefty that they get thrown.
Do you think Aaron Boone really makes the lineup, card?
Well, then send a message to Cashman.
Thank you.
Okay. All right.
Because Cashman has built this team for the last 16 years of crap.
And you know what we heard in spring training was that Ben Rice was going to play every day, and some days he was going to catch if Goldschmidt played first base. Well, that hasn't happened either.
Nope. It has
not. So the 4 home run, 13 RBI, .745 slugging percentage Ben Rice with a 500 OBP is not playing. I don't get that's another one I don't get.
No, I agree with you.
You know,
and listen, our conversations about, you know, Boone and Cashman are legendary, and they'll continue throughout the year. We'll see if Kevin starts joining on with the David Stearns or not. But we'll see if he starts picking on his GM like we pick on ours, the same level. I mean, he could if he doesn't like the way the season goes.
I like the way the season looks like.
Mendoza looks like he's a blister away from getting freaking fired. He looks like he's a dead man walking while watching him walk out there right now. He can't make a decision that works to save his life. And I have nothing against Mendy. It doesn't look like anything he's touching is working right now. Nobody's hitting.
Aaron, I know
what to do.
I know the splits for Ahmad Rosario are drastic versus right. He kills righties and doesn't kill lefties. But is it worth it to put him in there for, I don't know, a week at third base and let him play against whoever's pitching? Listen, and just let him play a week and give McMahon for a week?
Or bring McMahon in the eighth. Let him be the defensive sub he should be with the lead.
You know, I agree with you,
Gino.
I just brought it up. The split so far is he's hit .353 against 17 at bats against the righty and .231 in 13 at bats against the lefty. I don't care. Let him play for a week and sit McMahon and see what happens.
Yeah, we don't know he's going to be a huge defensive liability. He's probably not going to be as good as McMahon. We know that. But I think it's time for the – I know it's – like you said to start it off, Gino, and Kevin too. It's only so many games.
Yeah.
I mean, you can't go nuts. But when you're looking at the team, you know what you have. You know you have Judge. You know, the guys that are going to battle. Rice has been good. You know what you have, and you see, and the guys you thought were going to struggle are struggling, and it stands out to you, just like Kevin did with the Mets. The moves they made in the offseason, Kevin wasn't high on, and right now for the first month of the season, they haven't shown up, and it looks like, you know, what was Stearns doing? What was Cashman thinking on these moves? Now, listen, by mid-May, these guys could be exploding. Polanco could be going off. McMahon could have found the straw. I mean, who knows? But right now, everything that we thought was going to be something that held the teams back is holding the teams back.
Yep.
We'll find out more as the season goes on, and we have plenty of time to rip on it.
Any other baseball thoughts throughout the league?
Guys, Chandler Simpson leading the league in hitting kind of surprises me. Jordan Walker leading the league in homers kind of surprises me.
Yeah.
Andy Páez leading the league in ribbies with C.J. Abrams one behind kind of surprises me. Jose Soriano's the only four-game winner. That kind of surprised me. The guys with three wins, and you have Skeens in this group, and you have Sale, but you have Taj Bradley, Steven Matz, Soroka, Springs, along with Skeens and Sale, and then the four-game winner is Soriano. So some guys that you didn't expect to come out of the gate swinging have been pretty good.
And how about the saves leader at this point of Paul Sewald with six out of Arizona, who we had no clue who the closer was the day before the season started.
And then the guy that's been doing real well in Kansas City, in Urseg, who was not the closer when we did our draft. he's got four. So, I mean, a lot of things are going on in baseball. Again, it's early. We're going to see how it all settles in.
All right. Kev, let's move to you. Got some hidden gems for us?
Yes. So, Monday night, huge home run night. We had nine players hit multiple home runs, which was tied for the second most in history in a given day. And they only had 10 games played that day. It wasn't a full slate. Judge, Trout, and Grisham all had two home run games in the New York-Anaheim game. Ketama Marte, Arenado, and Jeremiah Jackson all had two home runs in the Arizona-Baltimore game. Schwarber, Josh Naylor, and Jake Berger were the other three to have multi-home run games on Monday night. Also from that Yankee-Angels game Monday night, you had playing that game Stanton, Trout, Judge, and Goldschmidt. So those are the four active home run leaders currently.
That's awesome.
First time since June 12, 1956. I remember that game well. Dodgers and Cardinals. You had Stan Musial, Gil Hodges, Duke Snider, and Hank Sauer.
Wow.
The four active home run leaders.
You could have given me 30 guesses. I wouldn't have come up with Hank Sauer.
You probably the other three you probably would have come up with.
What?
The other three, yeah.
The other three I would have been there with. Hank Sauer got me.
Going back to a couple of older pitchers, I just found a couple of things here. Nolan Ryan, 222 complete games, right, in his career. Seven no-hitters. Only four times they have a complete game with no walks. He was more likely to give up no hits than no walks in a complete game.
It's pretty wild.
His most walks in the season, he had 204. Greg Maddux's, if you take his eight lowest full season walk totals, that would barely pass Nolan Ryan's 204.
Wow.
If you talk about two Hall of Famers doing it two totally different ways.
The meme I sent you guys this another morning old-timer. Tonight seems more poignant now.
Yeah. Another old-timer stat here. Goose Gossage. So they're going through because it's been 50 years since Catfish Hunter signed the first real mega free agent deal. You know, we know Mester Smith was the first real free agent signing, but you know, Catfish was the first major one. Goose Gossage, 6 years, $3.6
million. Wow. Total.
That year, he joined the Yankees. He
did three innings.
That's where I'm going. He led the American League with 27 saves. He threw 134 and two-thirds innings that year. By comparison, last year on the Dodgers, winning the World Series, only Yamamoto pitched more innings on the entire staff than the Yankee closer in 78.
That's crazy.
Last week or the week before, I gave you the thing about the Fisher Cats and the Sea Dogs. That wild game, 10-run inning, only one hit. Last night, Tuesday night, Lehigh beat Coppin State in a Division I game, 38-6. Lehigh set the record for Division I baseball, 20-run first inning. The first eight reached base, five runs in before the first out. The starter didn't retire a batter. Two hits, two walks, four hits batsman. Runs 4 through 16 in that inning scored on either a walk, a hit by pitch, or a wild pitch. The last four runs came in on a grand slam home run. So the total of that inning, 20 runs on three hits, 11 walks, and six hit batsmen.
That's crazy.
Wow.
For the game, the Coppin State pitching staff, 12 hits, 38 runs, 28 earned, 25 walks, 10 Ks, 11 wild pitches, 9 hit by pitches.
Oh, my God.
I've seen Little League games with these types of stat lines.
Oh, my God.
And one more stat that I thought was amazing. Aiden Quinn, the third baseman for Lehigh, went 0 for 1, scored 5 runs, drove in 4, he walked 7 times. And those are my crazy – that's my crazy game of the week and my hidden gems for the week.
Sounds good, pal.
All right. Let's move over to a little NHL. Season closing tonight. Most of these teams have already played your 80.
One more day.
Yeah. A lot of teams have already played their 82 games. Islanders being one of them, Kev. 43-34-5. 91 points out of the playoffs.
You know, if before the season you went to an outlet fan and said, you got to have 91 points. You're going to be in the playoff hunt until game 81. You're going to have the likely unanimous Calder winner. He's likely unanimous.
Oh, yeah.
Winner rookie of the year. So. And you think, okay, you know, a little change in franchise, you know, some positives. You'd be happy in October, given all that. But the fact that they were in the playoffs position for so long and they wind up losing their last three and seven of the last eight, I think all of them or most of them are at home. Just a terrible, terrible ending to the season. You know, and they didn't lose properly. That's what it came down to. You look at 43 wins. It's tied for second in the division for most wins in the division. But their problem is that, you know, Pittsburgh, Philly, Ottawa, all with 42, 43 wins, they had 16 loser points or 12 loser points or 11 loser points. The Islanders only had 5. Yeah. They didn't go over, they didn't lose in overtime enough.
Yeah.
They lost in regulation too many times. You know, the goaltending, the defense was great all year. They're fifth in goaltending, 2.88 for the season. They finished 25th in goal scoring, 2.79. You know, pending a couple of games that are left.
Yep.
They only had 3 guys score 20 goals. They're missing, you know, Barzal had 19. We know Schaefer tied the rookie record with 23 for defensemen. Horvat wound up with 31. They just didn't have enough top six punch. And that's what Darche is going to have to figure out for next year is, you know, this was supposed to be the year that I think, you know, he's starting to clear out some of the older players. You know, next on the chopping block, you know, there's a guy like Anders Lee start to move on. Any of the defensemen, the Pelik or Pulak, do they have any trade value? You know, got to get a few more young guys in here. The last game, you know, they brought up Eklund, the 19-year-old, who was a high pick. You know, he had the assist on the goal last night. But like I said, you know, the way the season was, the way they got to 91 points was a disappointment because, like I said, the way they were there all year and fell apart at the end. But, you know, we'll see what DeBoer, you know, being the winning coach that he is, let's see what he can do given the full off-season program. Let's see what changes Darche makes to the lineup. And like I said, last year you started seeing some of the turnover that was necessary, and hopefully he continues that. And you know, need to bring in that top guy. We need that goal scorer.
Yep.
Darren?
Yeah, I mean, listen, they just crapped the bed down the stretch, scored, what, 2 goals in the last 3 games at home? You're not going to win games. And you know what? I mean, they made the move to DeBoer, and you could question it, but if that was the guy they wanted and they didn't want to have to go into a bidding war in the offseason, they did what they had to do. Maybe they got a spark out of it. Schaefer played great. He gave you everything you wanted. And like you said, it's just a disappointing finish to a team that had a really strong regular season. Listen, the hockey playoffs this year is about as topsy-turvy as you could get. Buffalo becoming an elite team out of nowhere.
Yeah.
You know, and no Washington and no Islanders, no Rangers, no Devils and – you know, no Toronto. And, you know, there's a bunch of good teams in the East that didn't even come close. Rick Bonus went off on Columbus today. He goes, if I'm back, I'm changing the culture because these guys don't care. And, you know, it was a lot of things. Not that Columbus is a perennial playoff team, but it's just a little bit topsy-turvy. No Florida, you know. I mean, you know, Tampa and Carolina still there, but a lot of things different in the East. Out West, similar. No Winnipeg, who seemed to be like a juggernaut every year. St. Louis always seems to find the playoffs. They didn't this year. So a lot of different things happening in the playoffs. And what we're going to do is we're going to get into it as soon as we know the full matchups for everybody. We're going to put stuff out on social media. We'll ask you guys to respond back and tell us who you predict will win the series. We'll make our predictions as well. We'll get much more into the hockey next week. Again, without the local flavor, you know, am I going to make appointment TV to watch, you know, Dallas and Minnesota? Probably not. If it's on in the background, will I put it on? Yeah, I love hockey. I love playoff hockey. It'll be fun. In the first round, we'll see how interested I really get with any of these series. All I'm doing is rooting against Edmonton. Everything else doesn't matter to me. Gee, any other points on hockey?
Nope. No closing points. Darren, got some buried treasures for us today.
Yeah, I got a couple for you, okay? I'm going to start with a hockey one because it's interesting. Because of the sexual overtones, okay, it's not officially banned by the NHL, but the number 69 has been frowned upon, okay? Only 2 players have worn it. Mel Angelstad in 2004 with the Capitals and Andrew Desjardins in 2011-2012 with the Sharks. Again, not against the rules. They just frown upon it. Baseball one real quick. I saw over the weekend. Bobby Witt, through the weekend, had made it on base 30 times. He was stranded 29.
Oh, wow.
Exactly, right? You didn't expect that, did you? The 1980s, we all remember, the first decade we really watched football like full through. Yep. Do you know who the top 5 running backs of the 80s were?
Running backs of the 80s. Oh, God.
Roger Craig.
Roger Craig is not one of them. A very popular incorrect answer from Kevin.
Barry Sanders.
He was in the 90s, much later. So no, very unpopular incorrect answer.
Dorsett goes back too much in the 70s.
No, he? Dorsett is number three.
Oh, okay. Franco Harris is too much in the 70s, right?
Yeah, too much in the 70s. Think of the Pony Express.
Dickerson.
Number one. Sweetness.
Well, Peyton was up there too.
Number
huh?
two.
Oh.
Five are the ones that surprised me. That's why. So Dickerson won, Peyton two, Dorsett three. Number four, Otis Anderson.
Wow.
And if you think that's surprising, number five was Gerald Riggs.
Oh, jeez.
Wow. Going
the Falcon way. Then the last one's another guest thing. So college football, we talk about college basketball all-time winning his programs a couple weeks ago. The top 10 all-time winning his college football programs. Just want to see how many you guys can get. A lot of them are very popular, so it's not impossible.
Well, Notre Dame.
Number four.
Penn State.
Number eight.
Michigan.
Number one. 1,022 wins. Michigan has the most wins all time.
Do we get down south? We get Texas, Oklahoma.
Texas is five. Oklahoma is six.
Alabama?
Three.
Florida.
Florida is not a very popular incorrect answer from Gino.
USC?
Very popular incorrect answer from Kevin.
Miami?
Nope. Very popular incorrect answer from Gino. So number two, you guys should have gotten already, because you said Michigan.
Ohio State.
Ohio State is two, okay? Number nine's a team that was really legendary for many years and has fallen on hard times recently.
Army?
No Army, no Navy in this. The Cornhuskers of Nebraska are number nine.
Wow.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
Now, here's the ones that I didn't know. 7-10. Are Yale and Harvard.
Oh. Well. They so play for the division plays is 1850.
I know, but nonetheless, they're 7-10. Michigan has a 32-win lead over Ohio State, who has 18 up on Alabama, who's basically tied with Notre Dame, actually. I'm sorry. Texas is one behind Notre Dame and Alabama. Oklahoma's 11 behind Texas. Yale is eight behind Oklahoma. Penn State is two behind Yale. Nebraska's 19 behind Penn State. And Harvard's 13 behind Nebraska. And that's my buried treasures for the week, boys.
All right. We will head over to the NBA. Regular season is over. We have started, I don't know, what do we call this, Kev? What is this, the play-in games?
The play-in crap.
The play-in tournament.
With a controversial foul last night.
Yes.
Before we get there, Knicks finished at 53-29 in third place. Brooklyn 20-62. Kev, where do you want to start?
I guess we'll start with the Knicks. I mean, if we want to look at previewing their upcoming series, they're playing Atlanta. They played three times this year. Knicks won both games in Atlanta by three back on December 27th and just last week on April 6th. Atlanta won at the Garden, 111-99. Now, that game, no Cat, no Hart, no Mitch. So, you know, Knicks were playing a little shorthanded that night. This is going to be a real tough series. Atlanta, a little bit of a rough start, 20-25. They had all this stuff with Trae Young. He was traded. Porzingis was traded. But Jalen Johnson, the 6'8 forward out of Duke, stepped up huge this year. 22.5 points. Over 10 rebounds, almost 8 assists. He is that next level player. You know, not great yet, but you know that very good, almost getting there. You know, so this could be his coming out party. This team went 25-10 over the last 35 games. This is
19-5 over the last 24.
Yeah, I mean, this is a really, really good team. This is a team that's going to give the Knicks trouble. Even Nikhil Alexander Walker, you know, 20 points, 3.5 rebounds, almost 4 assists. He's going to have to help with the defense on Brunson. They've got some veteran leadership there with C.J. McCollum and with Jonathan Kuminga, who have had some moments in the playoffs as well. What the Knicks are going to need to do is figure out how to use their I think they're bigger. They've got more size in Atlanta. They're going to have to use the physicality to take care of Atlanta and try to get the series over as quick as possible. I mean, this could easily go seven games, I think. Atlanta's that talented. The Knicks really, really need to step up. Like I said, play with that physical aggression. Really try to knock them around a little bit, take advantage of their key players being a little inexperienced, and try to get this over in six or preferably five games to give them some rest. Because if they can get through this series a little easy, you know, this Eastern Conference is wide open. They have as much of a chance as anybody else.
Yep.
Any thoughts on the Knicks, guys?
Well, here's my thing, is that this is going to be about the boards. Atlanta's a really good rebounding team. The Knicks are going to have to match the physicality down low on the boards. Atlanta turns you over. The Knicks don't turn it over. But what we saw last year in the playoffs against Indiana is that the Knicks had trouble with the pressure that Indiana put on them a little bit. If Atlanta does the same thing and forces Brunson into some turnovers, that'll be a problem. And you know, to me, OG's the guy, right? When OG scores, yeah, this team does better. They win a lot of games when OG's putting the ball in 18-plus points a game. When OG is not an offensive threat, the Knicks struggle. So, listen, Atlanta's got a really good starting five. They all came out and played well. McCollum gives you, which is, like you said, Jalen Johnson's a nice player. The Knicks with experience should be the better team. But, you know, it can't be Bridges. Brunson dribbling the ball in the fourth quarter, and then with 6 seconds to go on the shot clock, trying to make something happen with a double team on him and swinging it out for a tough, wild shot. Got to be a little bit more cohesive. Got to get Brunson off the ball a little bit in the fourth quarter, and let's see if we can get something going here. The Knicks should be able to win this series in five if they're able to get and keep Brunson rested. Gino?
53-29, third in the East. Let's lay it out, boys. Is it finals or bust?
Yeah.
Yeah.
They get to the Eastern Conference Finals and they lose. It's a bad year.
Well, they beat Boston last year, right?
They did.
So now it's Detroit. Detroit has not done anything, right? I know they had a great regular season. They have more playoff experience than Detroit. If they lose to Detroit, it's a disappointment. If they lose to Cleveland, it's a disappointment. And if they lose to a five in Toronto, it's a disappointment. There's no team that will not be a disappointment in the East, even though Detroit had the much better record. Detroit has no playoff experience. The Knicks beat them in the playoffs last year. They beat the Celtics in the playoffs last year. It shouldn't come down to that.
But I've seen some odds where the Detroit's only got the fourth best odds to win the championship in the East.
Yeah.
No, I think a lot of that is the inexperience.
And Cunningham got coming off injury. Yeah.
Cunningham got into three games at the end of the season there to at least get some action in. But the inexperience, I think, could hurt them in the long run.
Okay, so for you both,
yep.
If they do not get to the finals, this is not a good year. If they get to the finals, it's a good year.
Yep. They're not going to win the final.
I agree. I'm just
they have no shot of beating.
We did this last year.
Oklahoma City, San Antonio, Denver. They're not going to beat anybody. But they have to get out of the East.
I gave it basically the same spiel last year before the playoffs started. So I'm doing another gauge on us right now.
Yep, I got you.
Yep. All right. Playing game. Games happened yesterday. We had a little interesting. Darren?
Well, I mean, listen, we had an injury. LaMelo Ball, kind of took down the great scoring mecca that is Bam Adebayo. And that injury caused a one-point victory in the 9-10 matchup in the East. That was the 9-10, right?
Yeah.
Yes.
And so now Miami eliminated. I don't know why they do 9-10 in one conference one day and then opposite the 7. Just have them both play the same thing. Start off with the 7-8 game. We know who's in at least. And then play the stupidity of this crap. I want to punch somebody in the head in the NBA. Adam Silver's a joke. The whole NBA is a joke. Everybody's sitting out down the stretch. This whole sport's a crime. It's a crime scene, this sport. But, yeah, the injury to – they say Spoelstra was all pissed off, said it was done on purpose. Kind of – it's hard to tell from the angles I see, but it looks like he did kind of hit him. I don't know if he was off balance. I don't know if he wasn't. But, you know, the Balls are not exactly the family with the best reputation out there. So because of their father, you don't even blame the kids because the father's a douche. They you know, the kids get a bad rep. But it looked like it was a little bit blatant and Charlotte survives, so to speak, Kev.
Yeah. I mean, you know, you look in the East, if we're done with the playing stuff, you know, just go over the top teams, you know, the top contenders. In the East, you've got, like I said, we already touched on Detroit and the Knicks. Boston is actually the betting favorite to come out of the East.
Yes.
Well, they got
plus 550. But, you know, to me, they've had a tremendous season. Tatum came back much earlier than they thought, but he's not Jason Tatum yet.
No, not at all.
He's a good player right now. And, you know, Boston is beatable. And the team that finished fourth was actually the second choice, betting-wise, is Cleveland. Their problem is they've got the four players, the top four, Mitchell, Harden, Mobley, and Allen. Terrific combination. They've been together. They've played the same six games and 76 minutes together. Can they gel enough in the playoffs?
And like Harden has not been a great playoff player through his career.
Harden has been awful in the playoffs.
They don't win. He's not a winning playoff, but doesn't mean he can't. But they don't.
That's when a guy like, you know, if Donovan Mitchell is the guy in this team and Harden is willing to be, you know, Robin to Mitchell's Batman, for lack of a better analogy, they have a shot. If Harden wants to be Batman with his playoff resume, they're in trouble.
Yeah, it's Spider's team. And it should be Spider's team. The Knicks won't face them until the final, though. Most likely, if they go anywhere. So then we see if it's the Villanova kids or if it's the supremely talented Tucson. Not to say Mobley isn't great, and I'm not trying to downplay them, but it would be about Spider and Harden.
Yep. Out West, it's really three teams according to the betting odds. OKC's plus 110 or 120 to repeat. We know they've got the experience, still a deep team. You know, SGA, who draws 8,000 fouls on these bullshit drives and everything else and antics and all, but hey, it works for them. San Antonio.
It's not like you hate OKC. It's just a tough team to watch. Because you're like, Phantom call at the Phantom call.
Sorry.
I'm sorry, Kevin.
The Spurs are the second choice, you know, but again, much like Detroit, they think they're even more inexperienced than Detroit. Yep. And Wemby wound up with a bruised rib last week. We're not sure about his effectiveness early. You know, if he's a little hobbled or banged up, where, you know, maybe San Antonio loses a couple of games early, they could be in for longer series than they want early.
Yeah, Portland's physical, and that's not an easy series for them right away. To be honest, they have Klingon, who's 7'2". He's not as big as Wemby. Don't get me wrong, but Wemby weighs like 175 pounds.
Yeah,
I mean, you know, you can break his rib easily. I think
if Klingon gets, you know, a couple of well placed elbows.
Yeah, that's what I mean. He's a big physical kid.
And like I said, not a wind-up elbow, just those little short little jabs as you're trying to box out, you know, just a little extra.
Exactly.
And the third choice out there is Denver. Jokic and Murray are terrific. I think the key for them is, you know, Aaron Gordon. He's been in and out with some of the leg issues the last, you know, year or two. If he's healthy, that gives them the third guy that they need. And Denver's going to be, again, that could be a terrific series if you get to San Antonio, Denver in the semis out west.
How much did they miss Michael Porter right now? That extra score.
Yeah.
I'm just saying, I mean, it didn't seem like much when they dealt him. And right now, because of Gordon's inconsistency, Porter can put the ball in the bucket. Always has been able to.
Yep. Houston is the fourth choice, but they're all the way up at plus 6,000. They've got Durant, but no proven point guards. You know, we'll see how far.
They got the coach everybody loves.
And then the Lakers with all the injuries, you know, Doncic, he was over in Europe. He's back. Who knows what his status is? He may not be back until they advance. Reeves, another one. You know, how far can LeBron at 41 years old having to play? Well, that's true. The NBA, they play once every, what, four days in the playoffs? Listen,
the NBA playoffs will start on April 17th. It could go as late as 5-3.
For the first round.
I'm just saying. The earliest round two will start as 5-2, May 2nd. And it could go as far as May 3rd when it ends. And if every game goes 7, then the second round won't start till May 4th.
Wow.
You got to love the NBA.
Yeah.
It's a joke. Joke.
And with all this time off, we still have, what was the number I wrote down? 168 players at least missing Friday night's games. It was game 81. Everybody was off Saturday. Everybody's playing game 82 Sunday. But we've got to have 168 players over 30 teams. That's five or six guys per team sitting.
Thank you, Greg Popovich.
The Grizzlies sat 14 players. I don't know how they feel as a team.
They suck.
And Steve Kerr, oh, well, you know, I think we need to shave 10 games off. You know, the pace we play, it's so much more physical, blah, blah, blah.
It's not more physical, you dumbass.
You know, somebody put up, you know, I think our buddy Joe shared it.
Okay.
The Nick Wright.
Yeah.
Talking about, you know, here's what, game 81 or 82 in the regular season, and he's got tickets, big Bulls fan. They've got tickets for the Garden to see the Bulls and the Knicks. With the Knicks guaranteed the one seed, I think Chicago's guaranteed the two seed. They were playing for nothing. And here's Ewing and Jordan out there playing 40 minutes in game 81 in a meaningless game. And that gets a kid who's a fan for life.
It's called pride.
And nobody has that. We may have to go back, and we may need to rethink the 65-game limit for All-Pro and All-NBA teams and MVP. You're missing a quarter of the damn games.
Josh Hart, what was it, 2 years ago when he came out and said, what do we have to play, three nights a week? Yeah. I mean, you don't see current NBA players talking about that much. I know they did the thing with Bridges, right, where he played 81 games, so they let him play the 20 seconds of game 82 and they pulled him as an Iron Man or whatever. At least he played 81. I'm not going to criticize it. It used to be that if a player took a night off, we thought it was crazy. Like, you watch Bernard King back in the – I know, I'm old. I get it, Gino. But Bernard King playing with splints on his fingers during the regular season with broken fingers, you know. And these guys don't want to play at all. And I understand that the game has evolved into a way where it's really targeting young, and it's really targeting fantasy, and it's really targeting points and gambling and all that kind of stuff. But it's not targeting teaching players to fight through adversity. It really doesn't. And, you know, you just kind of miss a little bit of the old stuff, even though it's gone. Like Gino always tells me, he's like, it's gone. I mean, get over it. Gino's the first to tell me, get over it. Get off my lawn, Kev. You know, I mean, same thing. I mean, it's not the same sport. I know it's not the same sport, but I can't romanticize about it like I used to. And I love Darren, basketball.
Darren, you and I are very much the same thought, you know.
Always are with this stuff, man. Gino's our sanity. we're going to also post our picks for the all four series on eight series, I should say, on social media. Please let us know who you like and all that fun stuff.
Darren, you had a couple other points before we left?
Two real quick things. We lost two great second basemen over the last week. We lost Scrap Iron, Phil Garner, and a couple days earlier, Davey Lopes. As kids, we remember Davey Lopes as that stolen base threat from the Dodgers leading off against the Yankees in World Series and stuff before you had cable and you watched everybody play. Phil Garner, my favorite story about Phil Garner was actually when he was a Dodger and Mike Marshall, big guy, 6'5 guy, was acting up in the clubhouse and Garner beat the crap out of him. He was Scrap Iron. And my other point was a college basketball point, and as the portal is just out of control and it's just almost impossible to know who's going to be on your team next year. And we'll figure it out in November.
They relax the European rules, and some of these guys that are playing professionally over there can come back to college. And
Patino brought in the English point guard.
Quinn Ellis.
Yep. So, I mean, that's where we are with that. But Dick Vitale, who has beaten cancer five times before at the age of 86, is now, fighting cancer again. Thoughts and prayers. Dickie V is one of the reasons that we fell in love with college basketball. Never thought – I mean, listen, I learned a lot more from Al McGuire, learned a lot more from Bill Rafferty and other guys, but Dickie V brought the excitement and the rooting of Duke and the excitement. And, you know, I always appreciated the excitement he brought to college basketball. He loved it, and it's there was a story that was interesting. He was going to a dinner, it must be like 30 years ago, and when Moses Malone was in high school, he was recruiting Moses Malone, like, very heavily. And he goes to this banquet, this dinner, and they said, yo, you're going to be sitting next to Moses. And he's like, wow, I can't wait. This is so exciting. I recruited Moses Malone. They're like, no, Charlton Heston, Moses from the movie. So his immediate instinct was to go to Moses Malone. Anyway, love Dickie V. He was a big part of our growing up and loving this sport. So we wish you the best, and I hope you beat it for a sixth time.
Yep.
Anything else, boys, before we wrap up? Again, hour and 10. We're crazy. We are the Sports Kings from Queens. Darren here with Kevin here with Gino. Talk about the wonderful, wild, and wacky world of sports. A wacky world where we had nothing to talk about tonight. We still went for an hour and 10 minutes. Please download the podcast anywhere you get a podcast, whether it be an Apple product, Spotify, TuneIn, whatever you like. Listen, we're going to post a lot on social over the next few weeks. A lot of Nick-heavy stuff. We'll start doing the baseball posts. We want your feedback. We need your feedback. Even if you don't like what we post, tell us. And without any further ado, may your sports be with you.